Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Wollow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show for you tonight. I'm really excited. A few months ago, a good friend of mine that was also on the show, Susan Scheller, had called me up and said, you got to get Allie on the show. You have to meet this lady. She's incredible. And she's written this book called Guitar for Girls. So I thought, well, this is kind of cool. Yeah, I want to check this out. And I got a chance. She sent me the book, and she also sent me her new album, Make Your Move. And I was pretty blown away because this lady can play guitar, and she's legit in my book. And then she wrote this great book on how to, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But before I'm going to play a clip to kind of set it up and just kind of show you what she does. And it's from the album. But first, I want to welcome Jessica Barron as my co-host tonight. Jessica is the founder of Guitars in the Classroom. And I thought she would be the perfect co-host for this because this is a very, we're going to get into depth in this book. It's a really good book. If you have a daughter or you're interested in playing yourself, this book is great because it has a lot of cool songs that you can learn and stuff. But before I start, let me play a clip. It's called It's Up to Me. And listen in here. It's about a 2-minute clip. But all the different types of guitar. She's doing all the guitars in here, and there's different styles. There's kind of a funky type of rhythm thing, and then there's some hard rock lead stuff. But I want to play this because it kind of sets up where Allie's coming from, and it shows, it proves beyond a doubt, she's an amazing guitarist, and I think that qualifies her for writing this book. So listen to It's Up to Me. This is a clip from that.
Rock your hands from the safety bar.
I think that kind of says it all. There's some amazing guitar parts in there. Allie, welcome to the show. It's really a pleasure and honor to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
And also, I want to mention, I mean, she's done a lot of different things. She's a singer-songwriter besides being a great guitar player. She's done session work. She's worked with Neil Young, Paul Williams. And her songs have been featured on television, like Sex and the City, Dawson's Creek, and iCarly. So she's done some amazing, amazing things. But you started out on piano.
I did.
Now,
as a little tyke.
Well, that's okay. I understand that. I started on accordion, so half of it was keyboards. But what I wanted to ask you is, was that an advantage when you started to play guitar, or did you just kind of just, you know, did the music theory and the music that you learned and all that, the ear training, all that, that really help you, or did you just kind of take the guitar and went, you know, how did you start, or how did you learn guitar?
Well, you know, it was always very encouraged for me to play a musical instrument. My sisters as well. We all started on piano. And when, and I always tell it this way because it's true, when I discovered Led Zeppelin, I decided I really wanted to play guitar. And, you know, I didn't care so much about the piano. It was not as cool. So I asked my mom if I could switch to guitar, and she said, sure, you know, as long as you're still studying an instrument. And I just really fell in love with the guitar, and I did know music theory by then, and I think it did help, you know, in terms of the language of chords and that kind of thing, scales. But because the layout of the guitar is so different from the piano, you know, reading music and sight reading was never something that I got good at on guitar. Whereas with singing, I got very good at sight singing. But with the guitar, it was always, you know, which octave am I going to play that in?
Right.
But of course, that didn't come till later. When I first started playing guitar, I took lessons, and I had the most amazing guitar teacher named Brian McKibben. He was my seventh and eighth grade guitar teacher, and I then also took private lessons from him, and he introduced all of his music classes. Well, his classroom was this huge classroom in middle school, and he had rock and roll posters on all the walls, you know, Cream and Eric Clapton and all these amazing, you know, 60s rock bands, you know, the Beach Boys and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and David Bowie, all these amazing artists. And then we would play songs. You know, I played bass on Proud Mary. We would just play these songs. We'd play Stephen Stills and, just all these great songs. And he was just, you know, a hippie teacher. And he was the most amazing teacher. All the kids loved him. And we just could not get enough of learning music with him. So that he was a really big inspiration for me.
Oh, that's great. Well, the thing that's interesting about with this book, and we were talking about this before the show, is you start out learning chords, a couple of chords, and you're immediately doing a song. And she has a CD in here so that she shows you the song, so you're familiar with it, and then you play along and you learn the song. And it was interesting when I read that, because when I was in school, and we talked when Jessica was on the show before, my teacher, Duke Miller, who started the guitar department, the studio guitar and contemporary guitar programs over at SC, this was many years ago, he had done a lot of research in guitar pedagogy, and that was one of the things we were required to do, is learn how to teach, whether we were going to do it or not in our careers. And one of the things that he did, he started out, before he became the head of the department, he started a beginning guitar class. And what he would do is, within like a month after they learned whatever they needed to learn, they performed out at the student, like at noontime at the student activity center. And that's where I met him, because he called us over from the guitar department. He said, can you guys come in as ringers to keep the group together so they don't lose their place? And that's how I first met him. And I thought it was interesting. And he said it was very important that they get feedback from performing. Whether, in his case, he had a performance with, you know, an audience. But even like in a classroom situation, whether you're around your fellow classmates and you're performing, that interaction where you get the feedback that you play a song and they get it is vital. And he even mentioned that, because when we, in my classes too, I always wanted to go and do the studio thing and just like hide out in the studio. And he's like, no, you still need to play live. It's important because you need that feedback. And it also helps you what, you know, this works, this doesn't work, you know, that whole thing. And I thought it was interesting because the way your book is set up, within the first five pages or so, you're playing.
Yeah.
And you encourage people in the book, you mention to, you know, get together with your friends and interact. And so that whole thing, I thought that was very interesting to, you know, basically, you know, you get that feedback. And I thought that was an interesting way that you approached it. And, you know, my teacher years before, he had validated that. But I think that's very important that you play that way.
Yeah, I agree. I've been interviewed about girls playing guitar and women playing guitar and what's the difference in the way that men learn and women learn. And, you know, when you get in those generalizations, you're already in trouble. It's a very slippery slope. But taking the risk of saying something that will make somebody think I don't know what I'm talking about, women tend to be, we tend to be pretty social, right? We tend to like to connect. And guys, a lot of times when they're learning to play an instrument, like to focus on that instrument and do stuff over and over again. And they're fine in isolation. They're good on MIDI all by themselves, practicing things. And then they'll go into a group situation with some chops. But I think the fact that your book encourages a social connection between girls and women who are learning is really drawing on the fact that we like to talk to each other and we like to mirror each other. We like to validate each other's feelings. So when we're making music together, we're actually really having a good time in an essentially female role of communicator. And there's room for that in that book. And I'm not saying guys don't have a good time doing that. I think guys have a great time doing that, hence bands, right? But if you're a total beginner and you don't know what you're doing and you're just struggling to get your fingers on the right string, it's a lot more fun if you've got friends who are also going, oh, yeah, oh, man, I'm really having trouble. I can't get my pinky to bend that way. And you're having a great time encouraging each other.
Yeah, I didn't have that. I mean, I put a lot of stuff in that book, you know, based on what I learned from, you know, as an adult.
When I was learning guitar,
I definitely approached it more like a male. Like I, you know, in terms of the way you described it, I was would woodshed, you know, alone in my room, and I was too scared to play in front of anybody because I didn't think I was good enough for the longest time. And when my contemporaries, who were all boys, I didn't know any girls learning guitar, but when my contemporaries were out playing in bands, I didn't feel like I was good enough, which was ridiculous, but that was, you know, something that can be pretty common for girls to feel like they have to be perfect before they put themselves out there. And I really encouraged people not to limit themselves in that way and to be more social about it. But when I would get together with my friends, I didn't want to play in front of them usually because I was afraid they would judge me as harshly as I judged myself. And I think that's a mistake.
But they were men, right? They were guys that you were playing with?
Yeah, because there were no girls.
That's right.
There were
no girls playing, what I'm saying to you is you were brave to go do that.
Yeah, you have to be brave.
Yeah, exactly. You were very brave, and you did it. And then what was actually their response when they heard you play?
Gosh, I don't remember. It was so long ago. I mean,
Do you remember feeling like they were encouraging you and saying, hey, keep at it, and hey, that's pretty good?
No, but I mean, we were seventh graders. Everybody was mean in seventh grade. But I mean, I didn't get, I had a crush on most of the guys that I was playing with anyway. So
I know from when I was in school that guys, if, you know, they would be threatened. They would be threatened by girls.
I didn't feel that, but I also felt like when I would play for people and I'd watch other people play, I would just feel inferior. Even if I wasn't, I would just feel so bad because I wasn't as good as Jimmy Page. I wasn't as good as the records, and I didn't know how to get there. And I just thought, well, I just must not be good. And I didn't understand, like, no, those people have had, like, years of practice, and you could be that good. You just need to put in the time and need to be taught. To me, it was such a mysterious process. I didn't have somebody saying, no, you can be that good. You know, it wasn't until much later, until I was an adult learning, and I had a boyfriend who had the most amazing, I actually included his advice in the book, And he said, you have to be willing to suck. And it wasn't from a boyfriend's perspective. It wasn't that, yeah. He wasn't talking about that.
Well, no, you have to
But
make
you
mistakes.
Do. Yeah. You have to be willing to hear yourself suck. And I quit playing guitar several times as a young person because I sucked. And it was always when I was trying to play lead guitar. And I could not get past that barrier of just hearing myself play in the box of the pentatonic minor. And it sounded horrible to me because I was comparing myself to the best of the best, and I would quit. And it wasn't until he said, you have to be willing to suck, and you keep playing, and you keep playing, and you keep playing, and hearing yourself suck and hating it, and then one day you're going to wake up and you're going to be great. And he was absolutely right.
So you did get encouragement.
I did, yeah, in my 20s. This is not when I was 13.
But when you were younger, like for me, I was fortunate when I was in high school, I got to do session work. So I played with a lot of different people and I saw a lot of different people play. And then also, too, in where I came from, my hometown, Whittier, there were a lot of musicians. There were a lot of great guitar players. So we would hear them at the high school dances and stuff. So we were exposed to people besides the Jimmy Pages and the Eric Claptons, which you heard on record.
Yeah.
We saw people play like that. And I think that's important because that's how you pick up
it
stuff.
It is. And I didn't have any real life role models. Like, I wasn't from a musical family per se, not a professional.
But there wasn't a music scene around, I mean, in terms of.
Not in Lafayette, California. I mean, it's a little town. You know, certainly I could have gone into San Francisco, but not when I was 13. I mean, not by myself. Mm-hmm. I went to every single metal concert that came through town, but I was seeing people who were at the top of the top, and I just, you know, I looked different from them. First of all, I was a 13-year-old girl, and these were like 20-something-year-old guys. Yeah. I looked different. I wasn't good. When I started out, I was not good. Like, nobody's good when they start, but I didn't get that. Like, nobody really spelled it out to me. Like, yeah, nobody. Jimmy Page wasn't Jimmy Page when he was 14. I mean, you know, might have been better than me, but it's not, you know, you have to develop yourself as a player. And I was encouraged. I was encouraged by my teacher, but I had such strong negative self-talk in my own head, and that's probably a personal thing, not just, you know, being related to being female, but just being related to being Allie Handel. I had so much negative self-talk in my head that I just, all I could compare myself to was all these people who were just amazing. And, you know, growing up in the era of this metal and super fast players, I thought if I couldn't play super fast, that meant I wasn't good. And that was a long time in breaking that. You know, like,
I really
disagree with that now, but it's, you know, that was a brainwashing that I really struggled with for a very long time.
You were pretty isolated, but you had that middle school guitar class.
Oh, yeah, he was amazing.
That's what kept her,
you know, my teacher was so encouraging. But, you know, even with an encouraging teacher, you know, the things you tell yourself are so much more important, especially at that age, but really at any age, are so much more important than what other people tell you.
So how did you address that in your book?
You know, I tried to give as much encouragement as I could in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't particularly, you know, get rid of somebody else's negative self-talk, but I can be as positive as I can be. And
I noticed that you say in there, keep going, always explore.
Yes.
I want to say, this is page 3. This is a paragraph in page 3, and it kind of sets the tone a little bit of the book, but I thought it's interesting that she put this in early. You may be relieved to know that you don't need to know any music theory in order to learn guitar or to use this book. However, it's my hope that you'll develop such a love for music that your natural curiosity will spur you on to learn everything you can about it, including the finer points of music theory. The more you know about how music works, the more tools you have in your arsenal, and the easier it is to communicate and command respect for your fellow musicians. I think that's great because the way she's showing how to play, you know, here's the chords, here's the song, and then build the, it's interesting because a friend of mine, this was years ago, he was a keyboardist and he just loved synthesizer, and he, at that time, Miami Vice came out with Jan Hammer, where he did all the stuff himself and he programmed it. So he got a synthesizer and I knew his parents real well. And she would ask, like, you know, I really want him to learn classical piano. I said, just give him time. So he would learn all this stuff. And actually, it got to the point where he was so good when I bought modules, I would let him borrow them, and then he would show me how to use them because he was just
smart.
So quick.
Yeah.
But he started, then he got into fusion, and he got into jazz. And she's like, I noticed he's playing jazz. I'm like, just wait. Sure enough, you know, as his music ear developed, he went from jazz, which is much more sophisticated than rock and pop, and then he went into classical. And needlessly, end of story, he graduated from the Eastman School of Music and does orchestration. But he just followed the
pattern. Mom got her wish.
But I think that's important because as they learn, as your ear develops, and you know, from simpler songs and your ear, you get into more interesting things. And like you say, and you encourage people to interact in the book with other friends, you start singing it together and you start doing lines, you know, harmonies, and you start playing with that. And then you get more developed in it. You start doing counterpoint. You start doing, you know, and to me, that's important. And I think it's great that you encourage them to explore more. And even... You talk about songwriting, and you encourage them, like, just write something.
Yeah.
Because people are so petrified that, like, well, I can't write a song. Well, everybody
just try it. Yeah.
Everybody wrote a song that sucked at the first time.
Oh, everybody wrote many songs that sucked. And it's so interesting because, and I, like I said, I give a lot of advice that I wish someone had given me. That's a lot of the advice in this book is, gosh, I wish someone told me that when I was 12. Because I didn't learn that. I didn't think about writing a song until I was over 20. Like, I didn't even... It didn't even occur to me that songwriting was a thing. I just thought, oh, there's singing and there's guitar playing. Like, it didn't... It's just... It was such a different time and atmosphere and guitar playing. It was just so different. Or maybe I was different. But now, you know, being a songwriter... And a singer-songwriter, I identify now much more as a singer-songwriter than I do as a quote-unquote guitar player. You know, I think it's so, it can be so healing to express yourself through songs and through music
Well, the only thing that I see in here that girl, if I can tap,
quote-unquote,
is the selection of the songs. There are songs by women artists, which I think is kind of cool. And some of them are just killer artists. But
almost all the songs are written by women, too.
Right.
Almost
that's what I'm
every single one.
And that would be the only thing that has a sexual connotation where it's female. But I think what you're saying in terms of the chords, and you get into advanced chords and open chords, open tuning, all this stuff's covered in here. It applies to everybody. I mean, yes.
Yeah, it definitely does.
I know guys will look at, well, I'm not going to buy a book for girls.
It has pink on it.
But it's actually got some cool stuff in it in terms of how you approach some of the chords and show them some of the stuff. You can find these chords, you know, in other books, but the way you put it in context, I think, makes it very, very important and very relevant. So, but that's the only thing is the songs. And I think they're great songs and they're contemporary. How did you pick those songs? I mean, there's a lot of songs in here.
Yeah. Well, part of it was practical. I was constrained by songs that Hal Leonard had the rights to Hal Leonard was publishing it. So they gave me a list of artists, of female artists, and I was really lucky. They had so many phenomenal female artists. And one of the artists who I'm a huge fan of and very influenced by and wanted to make sure I included was Ani DiFranco as an independent artist and feminist and singer-songwriter. And the song that I chose for this book is called Not a Pretty Girl. And the first line of the song is, I'm not a pretty girl, that is not what I do. And I just, you know, I just think that's so important for every girl to hear that song. I'm like, well, if someone's going to write a, you know, a book for girls, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to make sure, you know, I can expose them to these amazing artists that they might not have ever heard of otherwise.
A lot of younger kids are not aware of people like Ani DiFranco, and she's an amazing
guitar player. She's an incredible guitar player.
But she doesn't push it.
No.
She does all these little ensemble things with different people and musicians, and they don't realize that really she's a monster player.
Yeah. She's amazing.
So I think that's interesting. But yeah, the song selection is just it's really, really interesting. Now I wanna pull back for a minute and I wanna talk a little bit about I want your opinion. because I think it applies. I think it applies to the book a little bit too, because you talk about I mean, the book is set up for performing, you know, to get people to perform. But I want to hear your perspective. What I'm going to ask you is recording versus performing live. What's the difference for you? How do you approach it?
Or for me?
I mean,
because I approach it probably differently from other people in terms of recording. I know.
Yeah,
I do.
I mean, yeah. Recording and performing. What is different about it? How do you? You know, yeah. Give me what you know. How you deal with it? If I can say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different, and recording can be different depending also on the project you're doing. I definitely find, you know, when I'm recording one of my albums, and I'm in the middle of recording my fourth album right now, and I'm working with the producer that I worked with on my last record, and the way we work, it's very different from the way a lot of other people work in that we're really creating the arrangements in the studio. I don't go out, for the most part, and play the songs a lot live before I go in the studio. Or even if I do, sometimes that arrangement is not working in the studio, so we completely change it, and that's often what we do. So that's pretty different. And you know, we're playing live. I mean, there, you know, you've got that energy of the audience there. There's nothing like that.
So, right, right. You know, so you're getting immediate feedback. And I'm
yeah,
talking.
Yeah.
And what I'm talking about, because I know you're you're a singer songwriter.
Yeah.
And that in your live performance, that's a focus. That's an important focus. But as a guitar player, you know, live versus studio. Do you feel more pressure? It's like more like you're under the microscope.
Oh
when
yeah,
you're recording?
For sure. Definitely. Yeah, and I'm a recovering perfectionist, so but I feel like I'm under the microscope, because you are in the studio in every way, vocally, songwriting-wise, guitar-wise. But yeah, and especially as a guitar player, because there are so many people who are ridiculous about nitpicking guitar solos and whatever, you know, including myself, you know, nitpicking on my own guitar solos. I always want to make sure that, you know, they kick as much booty as possible.
Well, speaking of that, of guitar solos that kick really well, I'm going to play another clip. This is an interesting song. It's called Shut Your Mouth. But it's, no, this guitar riff is really, I think it's really nice. And it shows, again, your rocking part of you, that you really rock. And I think that's important that you can, you know, you play a mean guitar. It's that validates everything. And again, it's not a gender thing. You're just a good player. So here, Shut Your Mouth, and I will shut my mouth and play this right now. That's pretty amazing guitar playing there. I'm speechless. But now let me ask you this in terms of the book. After going through a book like this, where would you encourage them to go? What would be
after,
the next step going through this book? That's because
oh.
you cover a lot of different things. I mean, obvious, you say at the end of the book, too, again, you reiterate the fact that, you know, learn theory, learn how to read music and all that stuff. But beyond that, where would
I didn't include bar chords. So that's a fun next step is to start practicing bar chords, which, you know, most beginner guitar players hate, and that, which is a reason I didn't include that, because there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do without having to play bar chords, and which is appropriate for a beginner. But if you really want to take it to the next level and be able to play any song in any key, you got to learn bar chords.
But you did put power chords in.
Oh,
there.
I did put power chords in,
because
they're easier to play.
Well, yeah, so
but
you gave
isn't a bar
them
chord
tools.
A power chord?
No, bar chord, you're holding down all six strings at the same time. It's so much harder than a power chord.
It takes hand strength.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when you're we're muting the last three. Like, when I'm playing like a full a full Marshall stack, I'm only playing the top three strings.
Exactly.
But that's still a bar chord. I'm still playing.
I don't consider that a bar chord.
No, no, because your fingers are actually rounded over the fingerboard. When you're playing a power chord, you might be muting with part of your finger, but you're not having to exert even intense pressure to get clear tone over all six strings.
Yeah.
You're really only aiming for two or three strings.
Yeah.
And your hand is way more mobile on the neck because you're not having to actually maintain the pressure through your knuckles all the way along the neck as you're moving your
hand. That's interesting. Now, I never looked at it. And it just shows everybody out there, I have two guitar players in here. You understand, Jessica is another guitar player in here, which is very, which I think is just very, very cool.
You're outnumbered.
Yes. But it's interesting that you said that, too. And also, too, now, how do you recommend them approaching leads? How do you start? You know, how did you start leads, or what would you? Because I don't think that's covered.
No, it's not at all, because that's not a beginner, not something that I would recommend for beginners necessarily. But the way I started was the pentatonic scale in the first position. You know, that first little box of five notes. That's how I started, and I would play for them some old blues. You know, with guys who are playing just like one or two notes and making it sing, so that they know, like, you can do a really kick-ass solo that's not super fancy and just learn how to play a great solo with one or two notes and then keep going. And that's not something that I learned until a little bit later on in my lead learning. But that's how I started learning, and that's how I would recommend starting with blues. Because it's the easiest to sound good in the beginning, and that's kind of a common theme that I have, is if you're trying to learn something, go for the quick win, you know, an easy win at first, so that you're encouraged to keep going and put in the time to learn the harder things.
Right. Now, and I think it's interesting, too, that in when you go through the book, you'll say, okay, try this acoustically. So you do these chords and do stuff. And then a little farther in, he's like, now do the same thing and try the electric. So
it's a whole different world.
It's very cool. Yeah, it's very cool that you do that, because I think that you need to experiment both.
Yeah.
And even in rock music, acoustic guitar is important. You know,
people
forget
it.
They always think it's the electric guitar on the Marshall stack, but they're doing other things too.
Oh yeah.
And also too, the other thing I wanted to mention is just you talk about open tunings and alternate tunings.
Yeah.
That's for a beginning book, that's a lot of stuff, because you're really kind of, especially when you do a different tuning, it just changes the whole world of that, you know. All of a sudden, fingerings change and create new magical things. It's very, because, for example, last week I had Jim Kimo West, who does slack key guitar. That's all he does, is he does these amazing tunings. And it just sounds incredible. But, I mean, he a part of it is inspired by the tuning.
Right,
so he just,
right.
like, this is cool. This sounds really great. I'm going to do this.
You know?
So that's very, now, do you use a lot of different tunings yourself when you perform?
I do. More when I write than when I perform, because it can be such a pain when I perform to be tuning on stage all the time. But lately I've been using double drop D a whole lot. On my second record, which was an acoustic record called Breathing Underwater, I used a really weird tuning that I developed for several songs, where I tuned the G string up to A. And if I tried doing that live, half the time I would break my G string.
Yeah,
it was such a pain. And I ended up buying like thinner strings to use. But eventually I just learned how to play the songs in standard tuning. Because it was just too much of a pain. But I love Dadgad. I actually, a song called Canned Hunt that's on that Make Your Move CD is in Dadgad. And I love drop D, double drop D. That's what I'm doing a lot of on the record I'm doing right now, in addition to standard.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting sound to experiment with those different tunings. It that can inspire you just
definitely.
By changing the tuning
definitely.
And just fooling around with the guitar. It just makes it's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But so besides the let me mention one of the things that was in here that I wanted to talk about. The the way you have it set up with you well, let's talk about the songwriting. I thought that was really interesting what you said in the book. It's at the end of the book, and you encourage everybody to just, there's no wrong way. Just mm-hmm. people write alone. Some collaborate with friends. Some, I'm reading from the book, yeah. some start with a guitar chord, a whole chord progression, or just a single string riff. And I think that it's really interesting where, again, it's important to just experiment. You know, like I've heard people that, like friends of mine that are poets or something like that, write a poem. You don't have to show yeah. it to everybody. Just go write something, play it back, take a look at it, see what it, if it works. If it doesn't, put it away and do the next one. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But you're priming your creative pump when you do that, and the outcome isn't as important as the activity itself, right? Eventually
exactly.
you'll produce something that yeah. has some resonance and has some staying power, but it's just opening those channels in your brain so mm-hmm. you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it also, too, it gets you... The important part, I think, and you mentioned this from your own background, it gives you self-confidence.
Yes,
now, for
yeah.
me, my parents, you know, they once we could play fairly decently, my dad would just take us and we'd go play.
That's great.
And we would play at USO shows. We would play here. You know, any relative had a wedding, we'd play, you know. But it was good because it forced – I mean, of course, we, you know, at first we hated it and dreaded it and, you know, like we're sweating away. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, we could hide behind the accordion. It was so big, you know. Mm-hmm. But basically, it got used to the point where it didn't affect you as much. There were some times where we get really nervous, but like I said earlier, I was telling you guys off before we started the show, in like my, when I was like in eighth grade or so, we played at this pizza parlor every Friday night. And that was like a regular gig that we did. And then we would sit in after. We couldn't play after 10 because of the child labor laws. So we'd play after, and it was a country western band. So the guitarist liked to play pedal steel. I would sit in with him, but it was great because we got used to just playing. Mm-hmm. And then when high school came and I started doing more sessions, that made me sweat a lot because you're like, you're under the, okay, they're going to hit record right now. But I learned to psych myself up to like tune it out and just focus on the music. And I usually found myself, if I could get myself to relax and get my mind off of it, I played great and I did the chart and was fine. But that self-confidence was a big thing,
yeah.
you know, and I think it's important in what you were saying as a child, you know, that it's not, I don't know if it would be self-esteem, but I mean, I don't know if I'm good enough or, you know, and yeah. it's interesting because we had another show on where we talked about with Lyndon Les Wise, the deliberate musician, and that's their whole thing about tuning out the negative things.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do, you know,
it's so important. Anything in life. Yeah.
I'm noticing a big change in young artists. I have a 20-year-old son who's a multi-instrumentalist and has my ears tapped into things and art that I had never heard people making. And it just feels to me like the new artists aren't so hung up like this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're willing to be themselves, and they don't need it to be perfect. And they're thrashing out there to make a sound that is a sign that they're alive. And that's enough.
Yeah.
It can be good, and it, you know, and it, you know, and also it, we're in a different time in terms of gender. Your book is,
oh yeah,
I'm not surprised you said there are men buying your books. I think we're so gender fluid now, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of guys that identify, you know, they may have been born that way, but they identify female, they feel more female in their orientation. What they think about and what they feel may be a lot more aligned with some of the songs that you have in your book. And it shouldn't be that we're driven by old models of gender mm-hmm. about who's going to read your book and who's going to use your book.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
if you look, there's a duo out right now called Power Bottom, and they just did a Tiny Desk mm-hmm. concert, you know, on NPR. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see gender fluidity and music that is gorgeous, and yeah. this is the guy's the guitar player, and he's playing totally beautiful, fluid, arpeggiated,
wow,
kind of an ostinato thing mm-hmm. going on in the guitar, where he could have looked at your book and picked up what he wanted from it, and it would have felt like totally in keeping for who he is as
yeah.
opposed to who people perceive him to be.
Yeah.
So I just think we need to say we're educating a different time and a different group of people, and they're going to take what you're putting out there and they're going to use it in ways where they're freer than you ever were as a kid.
Right,
or way freer than I was.
Yeah.
And if you look at those NPR Tiny Desk concerts, you're going to see a ton of young artists who are doing that right now.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, and also, too, I think that the one of the things I want to stress with this book, there's some very cool things that you're showing in the book with chords, open tunings, and all that stuff. It benefits
all
every...
All my cool secrets.
The cool secrets, yeah. But, I mean, there's stuff in here that any guitarist... And the thing is, you have a CD with it, so you can hear what she's talking about. It's not... It's easier to grasp because you can hear, okay, that's what she's doing, and then you can play it. Mm-hmm. And it's all spelled out in here. And I think that's important. Also, too, I think that I've noticed myself... There's less barriers. Besides, I'm noticing more. We were talking about this before the show. I'm noticing a lot more women players and great guitar players like Kathy Lauer. She's just amazing. But there's great players out there, and it's not a gender thing. To me, they're great players.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with anything else. But I think that also, too, I'm seeing barriers being broken down in terms of age. You're seeing a lot of, you know, when we were kids, we all kind of played in a band of basically all the same age. Mm-hmm. And you're not seeing that now. You'll see older guys playing with younger guys. And, you know, and it's not just younger drummers because they can last longer. it's like, you know, you're seeing a much broader... and I think that is important. Part of it, I think, is a lot of people write together and collaborate via the internet. So there isn't a bad, you know, it's just you're hearing what they're saying. You're not judging it. You know what I mean? But I think that that's opened a lot because now you're getting the influence from the older guy with the younger guy. And there is a difference because their backgrounds. My background is way different than what you listen to. We're a different generation.
And her book really reflects that, too, because there's songs from all kinds of different time periods and artists. You know, you've got... Do you have a Heart tune in there?
A Heart and Carole King and Taylor Swift.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're
so it's pretty. It's a pretty broad palette of... And yeah, like you said, and it's very cool that you're exposing a lot of younger players to these great performer and great, you know, songwriters and singers. I mean, Sheryl Crow, Melissa Etheridge. I'm looking at the book right now. Yeah. Fleetwood Mac, Heart, Joan Jett, Sarah McLachlan, Taylor Swift, Shania Twain.
It's funny inclusion there.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, a lot had to do with
who we could get.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the artists that I really wanted to include that we couldn't get was, they didn't have the rights to, is Joni Mitchell. You know, alternate tunings, oh my gosh. I mean, that's kind of the obvious
the queen.
Person. Yeah, but I legally wasn't allowed to include that, so, you know.
But she really was the first person that started doing a lot of that in her music and had no barriers to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got to the point where she was using... I remember when Roland came out with their virtual guitar, the VG series, she would use that because she can just hit a button and change a tuning because she did like 10 tunings. So she
is very similar. She has so many guitars that she brings with her on tour because of all the tunings that she uses.
Yeah. No, she, for me, the two big people the two women that just opened music. One was not a guitar player. It was Laura Nero.
I knew you were going to say
Laura
that.
Laura Nero.
She totally did it on keys.
And as a vocalist.
Yeah. She did.
I remember a friend of mine, a younger woman, was, you know, getting into singing. And she asked me, who should I listen to? I go, listen to Laura Nero.
Yeah.
If you want to learn phrasing, listen to Laura Nero. I mean, she could sing a tune. I was lucky to be able to see her live.
Wow.
But they, you know, her and Joni are the pioneers. I mean, they opened the door. For all of that that type of songwriting and stuff, and people don't realize that a lot of women did songwriting for a lot of the hits in the 60s. There was a lot
Carole King.
Yeah, but there was other. There were my head is I'm forgetting right now off the top of my head, but I remember talking to some, you know, to Denny Tedesco when he did the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
There was Carol Kay
on bass, right?
Carol Kay, yeah. So, but there were a lot of women songwriters that were doing stuff. And actually, I think a couple of them used pseudonyms because it wasn't accepted. I think they actually, in the very early days, they had to use another. It's just like a novelist.
Like writers, right, exactly.
You know, and, but the selection of the songs are, and these are interesting songs. And I recommend for anybody, male or female, check out Annie DeFranco. She does some interesting stuff. She takes
outside.
She takes you somewhere else, and it's refreshing. It'll give you a different perspective on your music.
Yeah.
So, but also too, I want to mention a little bit. We only have a little bit of time left. I want to mention the album that you had sent me over, "Make Your Move," and in a minute we're going to play a closing clip of that. And these are all available from, you can go to www.alliehandel.com, and that's the website. And I have to say, you know, this is a great website because at the very end, she has all the stuff, home, about stories, live shop, look, all that. And then there's a little tab at the back and it says kitties.
Aww.
And she has a whole story.
I'm a crazy cat lady in waiting.
So, but anyway, so a new album's coming out, right?
Yes.
And when will that be?
Probably next year, probably a year from now, just because of my schedule. I want to make sure I have enough time to devote to actually marketing it once I've recorded it. But I'm in the middle of recording it right now, and we'll probably be done recording it in not too distant future.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you do, that's just another excuse to have you come back on, because I want to go. I know we focused a lot. This book is important, and I think it was important to do this. But I do want to do a show in the future and really focus on your music career.
Well, you know, the book is also available from my website as well. Yeah.
And but you can get this. I think this is like you can get this on Amazon too.
Oh, you totally can. Mm-hmm. But I'll make more money if you get it from my website.
Okay, there you go. So get it from the website. And then also to guitarsinthclassroom.org. What's coming up? What's happening? There's a lot of interesting stuff.
There's so much going on. It's wild. But this week, just this week, we're working a lot in Los Angeles Unified. I spent the day today in the early childhood education department in literacy learning, creating new curriculum for hundreds of transitional kindergarten teachers to start learning to play ukulele. We're doing that as our gateway instrument be able to play with the kids and have the children start to play and sing and make their own songs for learning to speak and write and read English.
Wow.
This coming weekend is the LAUSD Grand Arts Festival downtown by the Music Center and the Chandler Pavilion and all of that. And our music ambassador, Cody Lovas, who's a tremendous emerging artist, is going to be performing on the Fountain Stage and pulling up teachers and children from Lancashire Elementary, which is just down the street from the studio here a little bit, where those teachers are all learning after school, volunteering on their own time, learning to play guitar and ukulele and use music to teach across the curriculum. So that's, you know, if people want to come downtown and they're Saturday the 16th, and Cody is going to be performing on the Fountain Stage at 4:30 with our kids and teachers. And tomorrow afternoon, I'm working with music educators from the school district who've all been learning how to play. The K-5 educators have been voluntarily coming into these professional development classes with me. They have a choice. They can take something else during their PD time, or they can come and take guitar and ukulele. And we've cycled, I think, 90 teachers through training.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's good. This district is, you know, it comes under fire a lot, but the music department is really kicking, like you say, booty. It really is. For the limited budget they've got, they're doing amazing work, and we're very lucky to be included here in L.A.
It's incredible what we're doing, and I just want to point out, even though this isn't directly a Guitars in the Classroom type thing, but we had been talking, Jessica, when she was on the other show, I had told her about a friend of mine. She had gotten pregnant, and when she had her baby, I said, show. I made a bunch of CDs for her of different music because she listens to her, you know, her favorite stuff. I said, but play this for your child. Play this different music. So I had some classical, some new age stuff, different stuff, very mellow stuff, but interesting. Well, her kid just turned 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to her. I said, how's everything going? She goes, I still play the music for her.
Wow.
But she said, my child is excelling in languages. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about the ear training.
Wow. Yeah.
It works, people. It does. I can't stress enough. The a friend of mine's a teacher over in by Diamond Bar, and he's interested. I gave him the website because they're talking about starting another music program there now. Mm-hmm. And I said, you should try this, and you can do this now in your classroom. And he's a guitar player.
You know, there's a lot of great research out there, people. If you're on Facebook and you want to look at the NAMM, N-A-M-M, Facebook page, they are always floating out great reports on studies that show us specifically the power of music to help us on all fronts, cognitive, emotional, physical.
Right.
It's a great resource. Yeah.
So now we're out of time, and there's one song that I'm going to play to take us out. It's your version of My Sharona, and the reason I picked it was a few months ago I had Niles Prescott from the Knack on, and we had already become friends on Facebook, and Alan's like, I did a cover of his version. So I told him about it, and he cracked up. He thought it was great.
Awesome.
So I have to play it for her and for Niles. Thank you again, Allie. I can't thank you enough. And I definitely want to have you come on out, and we'll talk more about the new album when the new album comes out. Okay. And Jessica, you're just amazing. And what you're doing with Guitars in the Classroom, it's just awesome.
Thank you. And thank you for helping us share about it in the community.
Oh, and we'll have to do another show. We're due for another show. We're going to have to do some more stuff. There's some exciting things going on with them, and there's a lot more to it. But anyway, everybody have a great night. This is Allie doing My Sharona, and it's a really cool arrangement. I think you'll like this.
What's her website?
Oh, www.alliehandel.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay. Everybody, have a great night and enjoy this.
I'm a little closer home. I'll be your home. Close enough to look in my eyes, Sharona.